already going to be, you know, I think a really good team, a top 20 team with a ton of potential. You bring back somebody who is so proven like Pons and is going to be motivated. His work ethic, I think, is pretty well known at this point.
Yep.
He's going to be a better player, I have no doubt, this upcoming year. And that's a little bit scary for the SEC because that means the defensive player of the year is going to be an improved defender the next season.
Yeah, and the fact that he was, like you said, you pointed it out, it wasn't like he was scoring no points per game last year. He was averaging just around 10 points, and you have seen people make huge jumps. Once they get one side of the ball down, then they elevate the other side of the ball, including, you know, point production, after another year of work under Rick Barnes. And I think you're right to point out his work ethic, the fact that he is just an absolute specimen of a human. I mean, you can't, like, build a better-looking basketball player than putting him together. And he was shooting 48% last year from the field. So the fact that there's a lot of good foundation, including an excellent foundation in defense, but a nice solid offensive foundation to keep building on, this is just, that's why it means so much for Tennessee to get this caliber of player to come back for a year.
And there's also this friend to the show, Rob, sent a message, kind of a reminder of a story I think we talked about on the show back in April. It's something that Gary Parrish wrote for CBSSports.com, and it was on the importance of getting an NBA prospect back, having a legitimate player who could go. And I don't know if Pons would have been drafted. He would have certainly had a good chance to be drafted. We'll never know for this year. But he was definitely an NBA prospect for this year. To get him back is a big deal. When you look at previous teams this past year, Parrish notes that six of the top 11 teams in the final KenPom rankings benefited from legitimate NBA prospects returning to school. And he noted that it's not a coincidence. In fact, it's a trend. He says that, this is what Parrish writes, the best player on each of the past three national championship teams, Justin Jackson on 2017 North Carolina, Jalen Brunson on 2018 Villanova, and DeAndre Hunter on 2019 Virginia, was a player who could have reasonably entered the previous year's draft, but ultimately decided to do one more year of school. So, he writes, keep this in mind over the coming days and weeks turned into months because of the draft deadline and all that, because massive decisions remain on tap, and there are players who have choices to make. And again, Eve Pons was not projected as a first-rounder, and we don't know for sure that he would have gone in the second round. But if he had decided to stay in the draft, I think it would have been a reasonable decision. Instead, he comes back to Tennessee. That's good news for the Vols, and history says that that will provide a boost for Tennessee on the court.
Well, and it's a little different, too, because I know, and I think that's amazing what Gary Parrish wrote, and the fact that you have tangible evidence that those players are could be potentially a catalyst into the elite upper echelon of college basketball. Because, you know, like Arkansas and Eric Musselman could be super excited that Isaiah Joe is coming back to their school, but I don't necessarily think that that puts them in the same level as what Eve Pons coming back to Tennessee does. I mean, the fact that Tennessee over the past couple of seasons, especially if you go back a couple of years when Grant and Admiral were on the team the last time, the fact that that was a high-caliber team and they just could not quite get over the hump, I think this is what Gary Parrish is talking about. This could be a player. If you see Tennessee get to a Final Four, you will have evidence to point back to Eve Pons being that catalyst along with the newcomers they brought in.
Yeah, and newcomers include legitimate NBA prospects, guys that, frankly, could be drafted ahead of Pons. If they were eligible this year, would have been drafted ahead of where Pons would have probably gone. I mean, Joe, you're going to see a lot of first-round talk with Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson for this year. And a year ago, we were hearing that with Josiah James. His freshman season did not go how he anticipated, and that affected his draft stock for this year. If, you know, if he had gone pro, I don't know what would have happened. But as it relates to this upcoming year, I don't know what their decisions will be. But if James has the kind of second year that I think he's capable of, and Johnson and Springer kind of live up to their ability, then this next year's draft could top the previous Tennessee record from last year with four Vols being selected. That was the record set last year with William Schofield and Jordan Bone.
It's just so amazing to think about. I mean, just take yourself out of the conversation and be like looking above, hovering over. I mean, the fact that we're having this kind of conversation about Tennessee basketball and everything that's gone on, you know, over the past 10 years, I mean, it really is amazing. And that's where you're at. And I mean, what Rick Barnes and those guys have built here is just nothing short of incredible. And you want to see them have the success in the NCAA tournament to kind of validate everything that they've done, all the groundwork that they've laid, getting guys like an Admiral to come back, you know, 2 years ago, getting Eve Pons to come back and buy in. Initially, right off the bat, I always bring up Kevin Punter, but that's because Rick Barnes always brings up Kevin Punter. I mean, that was the first guy that truly like bought into what his vision was, and that set the tone for how everybody else was going to operate. And so it's just really wild that we're having the conversation that four guys, including two in the first round, I mean, we could be having a conversation about a lottery pick, you know, in 4 months. I mean, that it just sounds so bizarre. But it's not. It's reality, and that's just so cool.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to recruiting with the level of talent Tennessee has brought in. Tennessee's recruiting at a high level. We'll see how things play out in terms of commitments and signings for the 21 class. But Kennedy Chandler is a guy that I think if he were to decide today, he's probably choosing Tennessee. He's an elite prospect from Memphis. And the success that they were able to have with lower-rated prospects coming in, Williams, Schofield, Bone, Alexander, Bowden, Lamonte, that group, what they were able to do, Fulkerson's still remaining. You know, he's a part of that big class.
Yep.
And yeah, he doesn't get enough attention because we're talking about the NBA draft, and I don't see right now Fulkerson as that kind of prospect. He's going to be a pro basketball player. He's an all SEC guy, you know.
Yeah.
So if we're just talking about depth and overall talent of the team, yeah, Anisiki, I don't know what he is. He's probably a little undersized in terms of his height, but a big guy that I think also wants to be at Tennessee this year to show that he belongs at a higher level. So. I really can't say enough about the top to bottom depth of talent and now experience that they have, the way that it could all work together. I think in the last couple of years, they lacked the amount of guards they needed to go through an entire season. I think they needed one more guy in the backcourt a couple of years ago. They tried to sign a guy as a transfer. He ended up not making it to Tennessee, went to a different school. I think they needed one more guard. They have that. That's not an issue with the backcourt this year. And the front court last year, they needed more rebounding. They bring in Anisiki. They bring Pons back. That's going to help as well.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, going back to your conversation starter about John Fulkerson, the fact that I didn't see him as being in the conversation for all SEC caliber of a player before last season. I mean, if you would have told me he was going to end the season being a second team all SEC pick with kind of a gripe that he could have possibly gotten more consideration for first team. But, I mean, that was just, you know, such a surprise. And so, you know, how does he take a step? And then also Josiah James, I feel like he is going to come into this season with so much to prove because I don't even think he was happy with how everything went last year. And it wasn't his fault. I mean, he legitimately had an injury, was never 100%, and couldn't kind of make up the ground, especially when his role changed on the team. I just think that he could be somebody that we are just wowed by.
Yeah, I think that's right. Joel Silverberg, one thing I'd like to see from Fulkerson is range added to his jump shot. He hit that three at the Florida game that he kind of had to take, and it was a wild shot. But if that's added to his offensive game, that can be a big boost for him, but that can be a big boost for Tennessee's offense if opposing defenses have to respect the range of his ability. Because he's a good mid-range and free throw shooter. I would think that he could take that next step this year.
Without a doubt. And you're not even talking about changing up his game entirely. You're simply asking him to add an asset to what he already does so well. And that's be strong in the post, be strong offensively. And you add that range and teams aren't expecting it. I mean, Frank Kaminsky was brilliant at that with Wisconsin a few years ago. It added such a different dimension to his game and to their offense when he was able to start hitting outside shots. So certainly that's a possibility. And hey, he's a 50% career three-point shooter, so why not?
I like that. Sample size.
So the rate could drop a little bit, but that's okay.
Hey, how have y'all considered, especially if Tennessee has to go to like a maximum 50% capacity for Thompson Bowling Arena, which none of that has been announced, but how much are these basketball tickets going to sell for if you're cutting the capacity in half and only 12,000 people can go?
Yeah, that's interesting. How would the resale of tickets work? Like, how do you know if I don't know how that's going to. Is it going to be game by game, or is it going to be over the course of the season you just get to go? I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no idea. but the demand is going to be there. I mean, people are just going to be handing over wads of money, like, please take my money so I can see this basketball team play. And then, like,
yeah.
the Kentucky
Well, I guess
ticket,
it'll be, whoa. Yeah, it'll be mobile, right?
Yeah, everything's mobile tickets. Yeah, everything's mobile tickets now. So that was already announced. And I'm assuming that scalpers can just text the ticket link. I don't know. I don't know how all of that works.
Yeah, I don't know either. I guess my initial thought is to be careful out there with that.
Yeah, definitely. If there's something that is limited quantity and high demand, there's definitely the potential for abuse of that commodity.
That's right. I can't think of any examples of that. We'll come back here on Sports 180. Yeah, 656-9900 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We'll talk more Tennessee basketball this afternoon with Eve Pons making his announcement that he's staying at Tennessee. 45 minutes from now, we'll talk to Tennessee assistant basketball coach Mike Schwartz about the news. Coming up next, I think good news here for the Pittsburgh Steelers and Steelers fans. What Big Ben had to say about where he is entering this upcoming season. That's coming up next on Sports 180 on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Welcome back into Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. With Heather Harrington and Joel Silverberg, I'm Josh Ward. Joel will have a midday sports minute for you coming up in just a few minutes here at the end of the segment. And Heather, we look toward the NFL season. Pittsburgh Steelers fans, I think, will like hearing this. Ben Roethlisberger has talked about how he's changed his life off the field. He's had to make better decisions. And part of that has probably helped him get in better shape. He's had a better mindset for it. Now that he's late in his career, coming off the injury that cost him almost all of last season, Big Ben, meeting with the media, said that he is the lightest he's been in 13 or 14 years. So Ben Roethlisberger, obviously older now, he's a guy that's been, you know, pretty mobile quarterback. He's been able to use his feet to find success on the field, but now healthier and probably healthier mentally. And it looks like healthier physically coming back for the Steelers, which I think are going to be really good defensively. And now they get Big Ben back at quarterback, which will be a big upgrade from where they were after he went down last year.
Yeah, they definitely still have some things to kind of figure out on the offensive side of the ball. But having Ben back in there, I think it's just going to be a huge boost to this team with guys like a Juju Smith-Schuster and the different pieces that are definitely around him. But Big Ben has. He's been extremely candid this offseason with everything that he has struggled with and gone through and the changes that he's made. And I think it's fine for him to come in lighter. Now, if he would have had this news like 8 years ago, 9 years ago, when the Steelers were legitimately competing for a Super Bowl, because I just don't have them on that level. I think they're competing for a playoff spot. I do not think they're competing for a Super Bowl this year. But I would have been really worried about that because he would use his feet and he would get out of the pocket. And is that lighter body going to be able to sustain those hits at this point of time in his career, especially coming off the arm injury? I don't think you're going to see him, you know, just running, very opportunistically at different points of games. I think he's just going to sit back and make the throws and do what he does. And so if he's lighter and in better shape, I think that's good.
Yeah, and I haven't seen the actual number. I doubt that he's lost a ton of weight. I'm looking at him from some of the throws he's made. It's not like he's, I don't think he's come in and he's dropped 50 pounds. So
yeah.
You may not
like
even
Phil Mickelson. Yeah.
Yeah, you might not even be able to look at him and necessarily tell. He's trimmed the beard up and the hair, by the way. Remember, he's growing the hair out during the offseason. But yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't call them a favorite, but I don't know that I would rule the Steelers out as a Super Bowl contender.
Really?
This year.
They're a 9.5 over under win total. I don't know. I just feel like the hierarchy of the AFC, I mean, like with Kansas City, with Baltimore, that's in their division, so they're going to get those guys twice. I just feel like the odds are really stacked against them to compete at that level.
Yeah, but you also, if you look at that conference, one team that you're used to having to work through or to fight through would be the Patriots, and I would not rule them out either. Let's see how things work out with Cam, but I mean, the Patriots, you would not view where you have, right?
Yes, you're absolutely
previously.
You're absolutely right about that. I don't think Buffalo, even though I have them winning the division, I don't think they're like long for the playoffs. So, but is that a team that could get a playoff win and disrupt you know, one of those wild card teams, potentially the Titans also. So, like, what you're lacking with the Patriots' dominance, you're getting several teams that are jumping up and have more ability to win playoff games, like the Titans. We'll see with the Colts, although I'm just really not high on Phillip Rivers. But also the Houston Texans, too, would be in that conversation.
Yeah, the odds I'm looking at right here have the Steelers tied with the Patriots for the third best odds in the AFC.
For the what best odds? I'm sorry, my feed cut out.
Yeah, the third best odds to win the AFC.
Okay. I mean, I just wouldn't have them that high. I think they have an elite defense. I just think their offense is lacking. And the fact that Ben Roethlisberger, he's on the downside of his career coming off a major injury. I don't know. I think that's interesting. I wonder why the Titans would not be getting more love. I understand the Patriots, but I think that number very much has to be adjusted now, especially with all the opt-outs.
I wonder if it will be.
Yeah, I wouldn't have them. I would have, like I said, I really think you can put the Titans, you could put the Steelers, you could put a lot of those teams on the same kind of playing field, the Texans also, and we'll see who elevates. But I would probably, that's weird. Definitely Kansas City with the best odds. Baltimore clear number two.
There's a pretty big gap. If you look at the Super Bowl odds, the two favorites are the Chiefs and the Ravens. And then you have a bunch of NFC teams. The Saints, 49ers, Buccaneers, Cowboys, Packers. I'm sorry, I skipped over the Colts as well. So they're tied with the Patriots and the Steelers as well. They're all at 20 and 22-1. So okay. they would actually be the fifth best odds. I didn't see the Colts there.
Okay. That makes more sense. And it's not like there's huge
that actually
degrees.
Surprised me though. I didn't realize the Colts were in that position compared to the Titans.
I think everybody really is banking on Phillip Rivers being just a dramatic upgrade over Jacoby Brissett, but I'm not personally feeling that. Even though I do think it is a team that is built kind of like when Peyton Manning went to Denver. I mean, they are really built well, too, if they get the right position or they get the right player at quarterback to elevate to Super Bowl caliber status. But I'm just not sold on Rivers being that guy.
Yeah, we'll see what he has left. He needs to be better than he was a year ago. A better offensive line might help him this year.
Yeah, the better teams in the NFL are in the AFC, but there's more parity and deeper teams in the NFC.
Yeah, the two best, the best team coming in would be the Chiefs, having won the Super Bowl. The Ravens, again, have better odds, but is there a big gap? No, I wouldn't say so at all with the other top teams from the NFC. So I would say the NFC is a tougher conference. The AFC is better at the top, it appears.
Yes. Yeah, totally. I
mean, you have the last two MVPs at those two teams, and that would be the difference. And how Big Ben comes back and plays, that's going to be what ultimately decides, I think, how far the Steelers can go, because I think everybody recognizes how good the defense should be.
Yeah.
The defense should be elite, and that's what, to me, puts them in play in this conversation. If Big Ben comes back and plays at a high level, stays healthy, obviously, then I think they could make a big jump from where they were. They just, with Hodges and Mason Rudolph, they just didn't stand a chance last year.
Yeah, their
but
offense
with,
was so
with
stagnant.
Roethlisberger coming back, I'd say renewed motivation as well. Not that you necessarily need it, but added into the conversation. If you're talking about teams that could challenge the best, I think the Steelers should be high on that list.
Okay. Well, you might be a little more bullish on them than what I am. I still have my questions, like I said, about what effectiveness Ben Roethlisberger is going to have. I do understand your points about him being motivated, kind of having a chip on his shoulder, like one last hurrah, because he's only got a couple of years left, I think, to play in the NFL. So we'll see. But
if you play the head-to-head game, though, Steelers versus Colts, which way would you go?
I think Steelers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Steelers versus Patriots.
Ooh, I think Steelers.
Okay. Steelers versus Titans.
Titans.
Okay, you said that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So you would have the Steelers fourth. I mean, that's not far off from what I'm saying here.
Yeah, so maybe,
that's better than the odds actually say.
And the Bills, I think you're...
I didn't ask Buffalo. What would you say? Bills versus Steelers.
I think I might go Bills, especially if it's in the early part of the schedule. The Bills just get off to, an amazing start. So if they catch the Steelers early, if it was a playoff matchup, I don't know. You might defer to Ben Roethlisberger that experience and a dynamic player like Juju Smith-Schuster pulling one out.
Yeah, like I enjoy Josh Allen as a fantasy quarterback. Real life on the field, I'm still going to go, he's older and he's coming off an injury, I'm still going to go Big Ben versus Josh Allen.
Okay.
Who could prove me wrong this year? We'll see. We'll come back. It's an interesting conversation, though. Lighter than he's been in 13 or 14 years. I like hearing that from Ben Roethlisberger. I think Steelers fans will as well. Coming up next, we'll get back to basketball conversation, Derek Jeter's comments, which I loved, and Eve Pons returning to Tennessee basketball for his senior year. There is a lot to cover in the next hour and a half of Sports 180. Right now, Joel Silverberg has a midday sports minute for you on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Back on Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. Heather, I don't know if you saw this. I know you're a big Twitter fan.
Huge. Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Favorite medium.
Yeah. So sometimes I wonder what Arian Foster thinks of it as well, because he's active on there. But, you know, he's not afraid to share his opinion. Arian Foster, the former Tennessee running back, had a good career in the NFL. So there was a question posed on Twitter. One time I did a gator chomp to Tim Tebow and he did it back to me. Share your most treasonous story as a Vol fan. Our guy, Eric Ainge, replied, I threw the ball to the other team and cost us an SEC championship. So I win this drill. So, Eric, being self-deprecating there. And then the guy responded and tagged Arian Foster, any regrets? And Arian said, yeah, not leaving my junior year. He came back for his senior year, 2008, which, you know, wasn't a great year by any means. No. Not for him and not for Tennessee. And then kind of got into it with some fans on Twitter as well. So I saw that. By the way, in that case, he's not wrong. I mean, it would have been better for Arian Foster's career if he just left after his junior year instead of coming back for 2008. Would have probably been better for him personally and for his professional career. It wouldn't have helped Tennessee, but I wouldn't imagine. But anyway, so I saw that.
Less fumbles that senior year. Just saying. And one less
maybe
bag of tacos, right? That was his senior year, too, as they pointed it out.
Yeah, I don't know the timeline of the tacos, but that I don't know how that relationship will be in the future. I'm not sure that Arian's too concerned about it, but he went back and forth with some folks on Twitter at Arian Foster.
And I hate when there's a sour relationship. You know, it really does suck because it's a guy that put in a lot of effort, a lot of time, a lot of energy into playing football here at the University of Tennessee. And you would like to think that somebody that had so much success while he was here, I mean, you know, look at his statistical categories and look where he ranks all time. You would like him to have a better relationship with the university, but I just don't feel like there's any love loss on either side. Like, I don't think Vol fans really care for the most part, and I don't think Arian cares for the most part if there's any sort of relationship moving forward.
Probably so. It is a shame. I don't remember exactly which season you might, but remember he came back for a spring game, and he was like the DJ for part of it. I don't know if he did it partly with Sterl or not, but I think that was before he had done the interview where he talked about tacos and whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, things just I don't think they've been great, at least publicly, since then. It's a shame. I mean, he's a really good player at Tennessee. He has a different personality and he's not afraid to share his opinion, and people are not going to like that as well. It's a shame. He was a really good player at Tennessee, and that happens everywhere. Every school is going to have some guys where they just have differing opinions, and Tennessee has run into a few of those cases, it seems like. But Arian would be one of the more high profile because he was one of the best running backs in the NFL.
Yeah, I think Derek Dooley did some damage there when he was the head coach for Tennessee and how he treated some VFLs. But now that dust has settled and very much cleared, I think for the most part, guys enjoy coming back. They enjoy being integrated back into the program and you know, being taken care of whenever they do come back in town. I mean, you get great tickets to games. You get to go in the different areas of the stadium and get tours and all this. The only gripe I ever hear from former players, especially from those 98 guys, is like, look at all this stuff these guys get, and we won a national title. So that's how it is for everybody, especially in this arms race of facilities right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everything's different from just 20 years ago.
Yeah. So different. Also, I don't know if you saw this on your favorite medium, the Twitterverse earlier today. Clemson has sent out to donors a letter saying, hey guys, if y'all can afford it, can y'all just let us hold on to this money for the season tickets, even though we're not going to be able to sell any because of the constraints that they're now in? Dan Wolken points out that they just spent like $55 million over the last couple of years on a football facility, $40-plus million on their stadium upgrades. I mean, it's just like an obscene amount of money that they have spent recently that could very much apply to, you know, just keeping the lights on this year for all the other programs.
Right. So spending in college athletics is, it's incredible. They do not struggle to find ways to spend the money.
I know. And you've got to think that all that's going to change now, right? With the lessons that we are learning in real time in 2020. You don't think so?
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, come on. Nobody can build another fountain in a locker room, right? Like, after all the heat the Alabama fountain has taken, are we going to see, I mean, really, a water feature? I don't think that's necessary.
Heather, you know what's better than one water fountain or one water slide? Two water fountains and two water slides.
What about both the entrance and the exit? Now that you can only go one way in and out of buildings, like you can't go out, like within the COVID-19 world, it's one way in, one way out. Yeah, I think you do need two fountains.
if every locker pod has a PS4, you know what it's going to need? A PS5. So, am I being a jerk here? Yeah, probably so. But I don't know. I don't know if spinning's really going to change that much in the future. I mean, it'll change in some ways. I just don't know if it'll change how it should.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But I don't think, I mean, the NCAA granting these waivers to dip below the minimum sports line, I mean, that's going to go back up at some point in time. You're not going to be able to operate under the NCAA. I guess that's assuming the NCAA still exists. So maybe I'm really talking in too many hypotheticals right now.
Yeah. We really would have loved to have kept men's soccer, but we wanted to build a zoo instead. So we did that.
We love men's soccer. We're dedicated to men's soccer. Oh, wait, hold on. We got to do some football stadium upgrades. I'm sorry. Men's soccer, you're gone.
By the way, I'm too hard on them sometimes because I love college sports. They're great. But, yeah, I would hope that maybe there is a reevaluation that's going on of, okay, here's how we can adjust our budgets and what we can do to help these other sports in the future. Because for this year, there's a lot of change that has to take place. But there will be ramifications over the next few years, I'd say, of what's happened this year. And that's before we see how this fall plays out.
Yeah, that's even before we see if there's football played. So you're very right. I mean, right now, the financial impact has been what I would call significant. If college football does not play 10 games this year, if each team, you know, falls below that, I mean, you're, especially if they play half the games or no games, you're talking about devastation. It goes from significant to devastating very quickly.
So did I lift spirits or kill up this segment? I don't even know what we accomplished. We had the Arian Foster Twitter and then making fun of college spending with Clemson as the lead candidate there.
Yeah, that was just, I don't know how we got down that rabbit hole. I'm probably partially to blame for that with bringing up the Clemson spending. But, two just not very good subjects back-to-back with Arian Foster and college sports going broke. So, bam, there you go. Everybody's happy.
Ooh, I do like this. The first-round grouping of Tiger, Rory, and Justin Thomas for the PGA Championship.
You know who I don't like
Buckle
that for?
Up.
Justin Thomas. Don't put in Tiger. I mean, he needs to be with, like, somebody that's, you know, going to be keeping it in the fairway.
Yeah, the number one player in the world is the third most recognizable player in the group.
I think Justin Thomas, he's getting 10-1 odds going into this week. Obviously coming off a huge win where he kind of had to hold off some pressure from Brooks Koepka there at the end. But I love Justin Thomas this week at TPC Harding Place. It's going to be fun. And that is going to be an awesome grouping. Rory McIlroy hasn't won a major since 2014.
So remember that question, at their best, who was better, Rory or Tiger? Sticking with Tiger. We'll come back on Sports 180-656-9900 to join us. Tennessee assistant basketball coach Mike Schwartz, 15 minutes from right now, right here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. A little NBA basketball going on. You have the Bucks up 16-15 on the Brooklyn Nets. There's a driving layup for the Nets. They're up 17-16 on the Milwaukee Bucks, the top team in the East. With actually, I have to go in a few minutes to check in for the Nets. They don't have the most impressive roster out there right now.
No, we could have totally played that game, pop star or NBA starter. Tyler Johnson, Garrett Temple, Lance Thomas. I don't know if I would have gotten any of those right. It would have been just legit throwing darts at a dartboard blindfolded for me. But you just blew my mind. Tyler Johnson, somebody I know nothing about except for the fact that he is starting today against the Bucks. $19.5 million for this guy? That's how much he's pulling down?
Yeah, this year. Man. Yep. So this year, I think his career earnings hit 50. He got 50 million. He got a big contract a few years ago, and was with Miami. had a big spurt. Got a big contract, and then was moved to Phoenix. Phoenix ended up letting him go. So now he's with Brooklyn. Garrett Temple's. He's been a veteran in the NBA for the last decade. Played at LSU.
Okay.
Good basketball player. But yeah, the Nets roster right now, they have a few guys that are out. Plus Kevin Durant's not playing. Kyrie Irving's not playing, Spencer Dinwiddie, so they are without Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, DeAndre Jordan, pretty much everybody you would have heard of. Yeah, yes. They're not there.
Yeah, yeah. I saw Roger Sherman point that out earlier from The Ringer, and I thought that, I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah, those are the only people I know. I can't even imagine going this far down on the bench. So that stinks, and the fact that these teams will probably play each other in the first round of the playoffs, correct?
So I thought
I had read that somebody had pointed that out, that most likely you'll see this matchup again as the first round.
Yeah, it's going to be a short stay. I think like this game's going to turn around for the Bucks, and then things are going to continue to go south for the Nets. The Nets Wizards game the other day, that was a tough one.
Nets Wizards. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a ratings drain. That's when everybody turns it and checks in on hockey or baseball.
Yeah. So assuming the Nets don't pass the Magic, who have a half game lead on the Nets, the Magic play later today.
Okay.
Again, I don't think the Nets are going to win this game, so they're probably not moving up. But yeah, they're a half game behind the Magic right now in the 7-8 seed battle. The Bucks and the Raptors. I mean, either the Bucks and Raptors are going to advance past the first round. That's one of the guarantees I'm willing to put on there as well. Okay, so we're running through the Nets roster, and you're probably not going to recognize many of the names there. Let's hit today's pop-up fact with much more recognizable names.
It's time for today's Sports 180 pop-up fact of the day. A quick look at a did-you-know factoid.
Last night for the Lakers in their win against the Jazz, Anthony Davis had his 29th career 40-point, 10-rebound game. That is tied with Hall of Famers Larry Bird and Karl Malone for the third most since the 76-77 NBA-ABA merger. Only Shaquille O'Neal and Michael Jordan had more 40-point, 10-rebound games. And Davis has a few more years left in his career.
Yeah, he's definitely got a few more years left. It goes to show just what a do-it-all guy he was with the Pelicans. And the fact that he can be on a better team playing opposite of LeBron James and still be able to score 40 points and have 10 boards. I mean, that's just incredible. And I'm so glad he went to a bigger market team. And that's not because I'm anti-small market teams, because I do believe in like San Antonio and some other ones. I mean, the Toronto Raptors last year, that they would be a smaller market team. But the fact that he's not going to waste his whole career playing for the Pelicans, I just think is very good for him.
I would agree. He wanted to get out, and I don't know what it means for Zion's future in New Orleans. I think he could be a huge hit there. He's obviously a big time talent and has the kind of personality that you probably need to be that talented, but also that big of a star already. I mean, he's one of the most popular players in the league, and he has not played a full NBA season yet. It tells you something about Zion. But what do the next few years hold? I mean, in 5 years, if the Pelicans haven't had any success, they actually have a nice young roster. But if they haven't had any success, then he might be thinking, you know what, I need to go somewhere else. The next couple of years, let's see what happens with Milwaukee and Giannis, because if they don't win this year and they don't win next year, there will be a lot of talk about, hey, maybe Giannis should go somewhere else.
I do hope that the Pelicans will, one, go after aggressively some free agents to put around Zion Williamson. We'll see what kind of players. I would feel more hopeful if you're trying to actually build a team around Zion being with the Pelicans than being in one of those colder market teams that we talk about, like people just aren't going to Minnesota right now. They're really just not going to some of these other places because of some of just the environment. I mean, New Orleans being a fun town. I mean, look at how they just love the Saints. If Zion has the personality and he's shown that he can be an NBA superstar, do you think that that could attract that second piece free agent that would go to New Orleans to help him out and help him win a title?
Maybe. My guess is that you hope Brandon Ingram becomes that level of a player and that you hold on to him and you kind of build around those guys. I mean, a legitimate star like Kawhi, Paul George, Chris Bosh, the star players that you think about that have moved, are they going to New Orleans? I doubt it. I don't see that happening. Okay. Is New Orleans the smallest market in the NBA? You have New Orleans, you have Memphis, OKC. I mean, it's in that conversation.
It might be, yeah.
Yeah, as a legitimate star player that makes a difference in trying to win a championship, I'd be surprised unless there's some kind of Duke connection that would bring them together.
So break it down because, you know, I obviously do not follow the NBA near what you do, and you know a great history of it. I mean, when I was growing up, Golden State was garbage. I mean, they were laughable. So how did Golden State transform into what they were from what they were before the Splash Brothers to after? Did they just get lucky in the draft?
Yeah, but partly. I mean, they were kind of lucky to have Steph there. They drafted him. Klay Thompson ends up being one of the best two guards in the league. They did a really good job to identify Draymond Green, who slid. I mean, he's better than where he was drafted. And then I think they were smart to not make the trade that they could have to bring in Kevin Love. Not that Love's a bad player, but the Splash Brothers was the better combination. Yep. And, yeah, all that came together for them to win an NBA title. So, yeah, they're a little fortunate with how things came together. But they continue to build on that. I mean, having that brought in Kevin Durant. So yep. It always takes luck, but not just luck. And Golden State, I mean, you're right there next to San Francisco, Silicon Valley. That's attractive to Kevin Durant. That was a big part of it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that they've got a little more, of the extra lifestyle stuff to sell. But still, I mean, don't sleep on what a cool place New Orleans is, an experience to live there. I mean, it is really neat. But, I mean, it does seem like an uphill battle to be able to, unless Zion just truly is a superstar and maybe he's got the personality to go with it, like people want to play with him. But it does seem more likely that they would be recruiting him to come to their team instead of him getting them to join him in New Orleans.
Yeah, and the Warriors did have Run TMC years ago, but they took it to another level, no doubt, with the Splash Brothers. We'll come back. Yves Pons can take Tennessee basketball to another level. He's coming back to Tennessee. We'll talk about that with Tennessee assistant coach Mike Schwartz next here on Sports 180 on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.